Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and you're at the intersection of sexuality and reality. It's podcast episodes like this that help us to build bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS and LGBTQ community, and we're grateful that you are joining us today. Today's podcast episode is really, really informative. As always, we invite you to share podcast episodes like this. If you are following along on our video version, we invite you to click the share button or even let us know where you're listening from. These podcast episodes reach far more people when it becomes more interactive. So we invite you to like our pages. We're all over social media on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. And if you are listening on an audio version, this podcast episode is available everywhere you catch your favorite audio podcasts. Often people ask us how best to help out the Latter Gay Stories podcast. There are two simple and easy ways of doing that. First is by making a financial donation. We are always grateful for your donations, and there's a couple easy ways of doing that. You can log on to our website at lattergaystories.org and click on the Donate tab, or we're Venmo friendly at Latter Gay Stories. The second way of helping us to expand the reach of the Latter Gay Stories podcast is simply, as we mentioned, by sharing this podcast episode. When people in our circle interact and are exposed to podcast episodes like this, they better understand this experience. And this experience is really what we want to use to help build these bridges between the religious communities and those within the LGBTQ spectrum. Now, today's episode, it is labeled From Mormon and Gay to Our Wedding Day. We are really excited to have today's guests on the podcast episode because it started really with the Mormon and Gay website. When the church launched the Mormon and Gay website, they featured a number of videos on the website to show what celibate and single would look like. Stories of people who experienced their way of managing and moving forward with their sexuality. And our podcast episode guest today was one of those videos sponsored on the LDS Church's website. So we're excited to have not only Jessica Fulmer, but her wife, Savannah, as well. We want to welcome them to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm actually really excited. I always say I'm excited for every interview. This is another one. You're both pretty incredible. You're fun. You're exciting. You have an awesome story. You're a fellow Badger.
Heck yes.
Alumni.
That's the best part. Yeah.
Turkey Tech.
Turkey Tech.
Did you ever get that?
I didn't get gobble.
We smell them, but
we definitely smell them.
We're all Snow College alumni.
Yes. Yeah.
Different years, but
we're same years.
Yeah. Well, I'm obviously much younger. Yes. So we were reminiscing a little bit off camera about the old days at Snow College.
Yeah.
And where the ritzy parts of campus were.
Where the poor parts.
Where Savannah lived.
Exactly.
I don't know why.
Again, thank you for taking a few minutes to share your story. This is a fascinating interview because and the title of the interview is kind of fun and catchy, From Mormon and Gay to Wedding Day. We're going to cover a lot of territory.
Yeah.
A lot of the podcast interview today will focus kind of on and maybe Jessica, you were the catalyst to this whole story. But how you started out with what you put on your blog, 3 years and nearly a million views on your Mormon and Gay website video, to your wedding day and the future between you and Savannah. So kind of the highlight of this podcast. The other really cool part about this interview that I think will be beneficial is the fact that Savannah, you identify as bisexual and asexual. Yes. So these are two topics that don't get a lot of attention in the LGBTQ world. So I really want to dig into that a little bit and kind of go through your experience, how you identify as asexual, what that means, what your experience was like that way, and how when you knew, you knew, and how that was important for you when you found Jessica.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm excited too. So first, let's start. typically in these interviews, we start with kind of, and in the beginning there was. But instead of starting with light, let's start with how you got involved with the church, with the LDS church, being featured in one of the most landmark moves for the LGBTQ movement within Mormonism by being one of the first 16 videos that appeared on the mormonandgay.lds.org website.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
So it was right after my mission, and I was still, it was actually right, maybe a year after my mission, I started really figuring out that I couldn't date guys, and this wasn't going to work as much as I kept trying. So I started dabbling in all of these gay Mormon groups, and I don't know, I didn't really find a specific place, but I started kind of leaning towards the North Star group. And as I got some friends in that group, and as I started, I don't know, getting close to some of those people, there was like a forum type thing going around where they're like, we want to know some stories about those of you that are in the Mormon church as well as are gay or LGBTQ. And so I just send in my story thinking like, oh, they just, you know, want to understand more, not a big deal. And then I ended up getting a call, and they were like, hey, we want to kind of talk to you a little bit more about your story. And I was like, okay. And so I started talking a little bit more about it, and they were like, how would you feel about, you know, going on this new website that they're planning on putting out? And at the time, I didn't know how I was going to live celibate life. That was my plan. That was my goal. That's what I wanted to do. But I didn't know how that was going to work. And when they had offered this opportunity to go onto the website, I thought that maybe this was the way I could do it. Maybe this would be my purpose in life. Maybe this would give me enough of a drive and purpose in life so that I wouldn't focus so much on not having a companion. I could just focus on speaking and helping others. And that was the original plan.
Who did you discuss the ins and outs, the ups and downs, the I don't know, should I or should I not, conversation with regarding to the idea of putting your story on such a big platform?
Yeah, there were a lot of people, up through church headquarters, a lot of lower people. I mean, there were just so many people that were putting this into place. There were like story writers, there was director, there was people over the site. There was just a lot of people. Most of the people that I would specifically talk to were like family and friends of like, is this something that I should do? Am I in over my head with this? So for the most part, it was family and friends that I would talk to.
Any fears or trepidation? Like, was there a point where you said, I can't do it because?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, you know, I was actually really excited about it moving forward. At the very beginning, I was like, man, this is it. I was pumped and ready to go for it. And then it was actually the filming. I remember, I think it was the first night after we filmed, I remember I had a panic attack that night, and I was like, I'm in now. You know, we've just filmed for a full day. We've got one more day of filming. Like, this is it. Like, I don't really have a choice, and I'm all in now. And I remember kind of thinking like, what have I done? I guess we'll find out. So, yeah.
And how did it roll out? I mean, your first couple days, you're live on the big screen. And I'm sure everyone is favorable and nice and only had kind things to say.
Exactly. Everybody was just completely supportive of my choice. Yeah, that was probably obviously the hardest part. It went live and it hit big really, really fast. I think a lot bigger than I thought it would go. However, I only have good things to say about those in church headquarters that were helping me through it. They were trying to prepare me. They were doing everything they could to be like, you know, let's get you some help and support through this. But nothing can really prepare you for that, because I hadn't even come out as gay, technically. Like, I had talked to some of my close family and friends, but this was sort of my coming out, and it was a big coming out. So I had a lot of emotions going on with that. But yeah, I think one of the hardest parts was seeing how I got backlash from both communities, which was so fascinating, because I'm over here saying, you know, I'm going to stay celibate. I'm going to live this, you know, Mormon righteous life in the church. And I had church members that were upset at me, and they're like, how dare you, like, you know, limit yourself to this? How dare you, you know, say that you're going to live celibate, like you can change, you can be attracted to men, whatever. But then I had those in the gay community that were upset at me because they were like, how dare you say that you're going to be celibate? Like, why aren't you living your true self? So it was this pull back and forth. And I was just, I mean, it was just a whirlwind. It was very, very difficult.
It was almost like living in Savannah's world. This, you're bisexual, so you can just do,
exactly.
You can just,
exactly.
There's no problem with you dating men, so just date men exclusively.
Exactly.
Just choose men.
Yeah,
just,
the straight heck? Community is so much, that's your world right there. But then the gay community says, well, you're not gay enough for us, so.
Yeah, there's no place for
it's
you.
It's this weird limbo.
It is, yeah.
Savannah, did you see Jessica's video on Mormon and Gay?
Yeah, I did. And then I remember texting you after being like, yeah. I saw it. Good job. Like just trying to be supportive. But we had reconnected probably a year before that. And then I don't know if we want to go into that now, but then our story happened after that.
Yeah. Let's reverse this a little bit because you both went to school together.
Yeah.
In the same high school,
yep.
Obviously
yep.
The same college as well.
Yep.
But you couldn't be any more opposite in terms of even friendship and attraction.
I know.
So kind of walk us through that experience. Tell us just a little bit about how school life was like and how, oddly enough, like you two continue to have, you bumped into each other continually, but yet you were too oblivious to realize like that's my future
right there. We were in different circles. Jess was winning state championships and I was editing the yearbook. So we were in different realms for the duration of high school, but I knew
of her and we had actually talked like maybe once or twice in high school. But I knew her sister because her sister was into basketball and I had played basketball. So I knew that as her, you know, her sister's sister. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like she's, I actually remember thinking she's so pretty. You know, there wasn't like,
it wasn't.
Like, yes, she was.
I had like an 18-year-long awkward stage. So I don't.
Not true.
Blame you for not noticing me.
Not true. I thought she was very pretty in high school, but we didn't, yeah, we just bumped in the hallway here and there, just said hi.
Yeah, I always thought you were cool. I didn't. I just wasn't in that.
No idea we'd get married.
I know. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. But yeah, then we went to college, and we went to the same college, Snow College. And the main interaction that we had there was she mooched a ride off of me, didn't pay me gas or anything.
Oh, I mooched off so many people. Didn't have a car down there. It's like, oh, you're going to Roy?
Back to the reason why you were living at Snow Garden.
There it is. The rest of us made the sacrifice. Yeah. I was paying for gas.
No, we'll pay you back. I'll write you a check.
So I had come up just to visit my family for like a weekend or something, and she had heard that I was heading back down to Snow College, and so I gave her a ride with like three or four other friends. Yeah, a bunch of people were just getting a carpool back down, and I remember her laying in the back seat, and she just calmly randomly said, can you pull over? And I was like, yeah, sure, are you okay? And she's like, yeah. And then she like opens the door and just throws up everywhere.
Throws up like there's no tomorrow. Like we stopped at a gas station and then I threw up.
And then she gets in and just like calmly goes back to sleep. And I'm like, she looks like an angel.
But
that was our big.
That's our beginning.
This is how some people find love at first sight.
I'm puking outside of your car.
Yeah, if you're wondering, like, how do I date? How do I find people to date?
Get car sick.
Pull over. Ironically, though, we didn't start like super hanging out until she started dating the same guy that I had dated, and then that's when we started hanging out.
This interview is getting more and more Mormon as we go.
So that was fun.
Same guy you dated in high school together?
No, college. Mom. So I had dated this guy and we, you know, ended up telling him I was gay. And so we just became best friends. And then he was like, oh, I'm dating this girl named Savannah. And I was like, Savannah's awesome. I don't even know why, because we weren't like super close, but ended up reconnecting through him. And it was game over after that. Poor guy.
So in high school, Savannah, how did you, or did you even know what you identified as?
I definitely didn't know what I identified as, but I knew that I was different, that I didn't fit the mold of my other friends just because they were always dating seriously dating, because I went on a lot of dates, but they were always, you know, boy crazy and wanting to be in a relationship. And I remember telling a lot of my friends, and I had a close group of guy friends, I remember telling them, like, I just don't have hormones. Like, I just came out and said it. I was like, I don't have hormones. I don't know what's wrong with me. Nobody's attractive, like, guys or girls. I just was like this weird enigma, but I was like, oh, it's just, you know, not the right time. Like, I'll just find it. Because I went on lots of dates with guys. I exclusively dated like maybe 3 or 4 guys ever, but still I just never had like really, really strong attractions.
I think that's the interesting part of the discussion in terms of asexuality, where maybe walk us through that. How do you define asexuality, and what was your experience like understanding, learning about, and mitigating that part of yourself?
So it's kind of, and I don't want to do the asexual community any disjustice, because I've honestly labeled myself in that category when I found you, just because I was going back to be like, what was I then? Like, how would I classify, or what, you know, category would I put myself in through high school and college? Because I didn't date guys or girls, like, and feel what most people feel when they date. And so I think it was super later in life that I was like, I think I was asexual, but I don't want to say that I am, because I know that asexual, some never feel any attractions. And so I don't want to say that, I don't know, it's hard to put myself in one category, but that's what I would call myself kind of growing up, was just asexual, because I just didn't feel like, oh, he's so cute and he's so cute. I was like, really? Like, you think he's cute? Like, okay, go for it.
I think what you're explaining is really familiar territory. You can't be faulted for not knowing what you didn't know.
Right.
And for many of us, especially in the LGBTQ spectrum, we often aren't able to put words to feelings.
Yeah.
And when you compound that with Mormonism, our upbringing in the church,
yep,
where this topic has been so taboo,
yeah,
and never,
yeah,
talked about, we just don't have that language at all,
yes,
to describe what's going on. So I think people who might be listening to this who are closeted or questioning or trying to understand their sexuality might resonate with that and understand, oh, you know, I'm experiencing those same feelings also. So I think that could be a powerful motivator and just another opportunity to share experiences and help other people up and out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not alone.
Very true. Yeah, very true. So you're in college. You obviously have no shame in puking out car windows.
Yes.
And obviously, Jess has no problem with people who puke out of her cars either. So,
well, they're as pretty as her. Absolutely not.
Let's get to, so you created a friendship, but it was kind of a unique friendship too.
Yeah.
Because the closer you got, the more confused your relationship started to become.
Yeah.
It's kind of ventured down that territory also.
Yes. Well, just to kind of pick up where we were, I was kind of seeing the same guy that she had dated, but it was during my, so yeah, just through that, this was after Snow College. I went to Weber State and then was going to the singles ward in my hometown. But I still, like, I dated lots of people. I tried, which to the outside world is like, look, you're not asexual, or, you know, you just like guys. You dated so many. Like, that's a lot of the stuff I got. But
you just haven't found the right one.
Yeah, yeah. Just keep trying. Yeah. Like, he's out there. So I, you know, was putting myself out there. I was trying. I went on a few dates with this one guy, but I just still didn't feel like anything, you know, looking forward, that I felt for Jess, but I didn't feel anything that people talked about. Because I remember telling my mom in the car one day, I was like, how do people get married? Like, how are you with somebody all the time? Like, I just don't get it. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And she's like, oh, you will. And I did. But so, yeah, I was dating this guy, and he was super sweet and nice and awesome, but I just didn't feel it. And for some reason, this guy and Jess, like, orchestrated this, like, reunion of me and Jess, which I'm, like,
why.
You know, I looking back, I was like, why did you guys orchestrate this? We weren't even, like, you know, close friends or anything, but...
This was about a year before the Mormon and Gay site came out.
Yeah, so he was playing in this co-ed softball team, and so he brought me to the park, and Jess was at the end of the sidewalk, and, like, we talk about it still. Like, I still remember it like it happened, like, this morning, but I was walking down the sidewalk, and just, like, everything, like, around me just, like, went away, like, was blurry, and I was just, like, looking at Jess, and I just was, like, this, like, long-lost, like, best friend, but instant connection, and, like, I don't know. It just was the most, like, surreal thing, and I said when I saw you, I was like, well, we can go do something. Like, we don't have to include this guy. We can just go. I was like, it can be a date, and then I was like, did I just say date?
Like, I think I just came out to you gay then, too, right?
A little, right after that.
Oh, right after that.
I yeah.
Like, I thought it was before that, because then you said date after.
Oh, okay. I promise.
Anyways,
yeah,
I told
remember.
Her I was gay during that time, too. I was like, by the way.
So, yeah, it just was at the softball field that we got reunited and reconnected. And...
But for that year, we didn't... I mean, we hung out a few times. Like, we went snowboarding and
went to
some jazz games and lunch and stuff. But it was probably, like, once a month, maybe, we'd hang out. And then after my video came out, we still didn't hang out really for almost a whole year. I mean, it was like eight months after that.
Yeah. You were struggling. I wanted to, like, I wanted to travel with you. I wanted to do stuff with you, but you were in a really, really dark place. Like, just mentally. And
yeah, I was holding on for dear life at that point. And, but yeah, then she came with me to California for a speaking opportunity that I had that summer, July, and that was 3.5 years ago.
And this was part of the Mormon and Gay website, because when you release something like that with the church, you kind of get thrown into the circuit.
Yes, and they were doing this big, like, singles, I don't even know what it was, a conference, singles multi-state conference in California. And so they said, we'll fly you out if you come and speak at this. And I said, okay. And so I was talking to her. I'm like, hey, like, I'm going to California if you want to come. And this whole time I'm thinking that she's straight, right?
You say that, but I invited myself. You don't remember it the way I do.
I don't remember her inviting herself.
Like, was like, I'm coming with you. Like, I... called into work. I'm like, I need PTO. Like, I'm leaving for California.
You have, like, big meetings and stuff. Like, you, but you're like, I'm coming anyways.
It was like a barbecue that I was going to help with at work, but I was like, I have to go to California. Like,
but I
so yeah, you remember
a little different, but yeah, but I thought she was straight the whole time, but I do remember we were going, I think it was to Knott's Berry. I think we were in the parking lot going to Knott's Berry Farm. And she briefly said, I don't think that I really have attractions to anybody. I don't think I've ever had attractions to anybody. And I'm like, oh.
I don't think I love anybody.
Yeah.
Like, trying to, like,
allude to asexual or
something. Just try to, like.
And I said that. I was like, oh, so you're asexual. And, like, I feel like.
I was like, what's that?
but with our friend that was there, too, she had kind of divulged some stuff as well. And I think it was a very safe circle with it. Because, obviously, I had come out to everybody as gay. She finally had a safe place to be like, be able to explore her feelings. And so I think at that point she was like, you know, alluding, like, you know, oh, I haven't had attractions. And then, yeah. So at that point I thought she was asexual, but, that from that trip on, we were inseparable.
This whole time Savannah's like clearing the plate. Like, I am 100% available and free.
Yes. And I've never
had that. And you're like, Ray Charles, I don't get it. Like, I don't see anything here.
Yeah. I've never been that gung-ho, like, you know, feeling, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is what people talk about. Like, this is why people, like, clear their whole lives to date and do, you know, activities with people. Cause I was like, up until then, I just didn't get it. And I just was like, oh yeah, like, if I was busy, I was busy. I wouldn't really, you know, change plans to do something with someone, but, you know, that I was interested in. But yeah, that was.
We were inseparable after that. It was every single day.
So you become more and more inseparable. Your friendship is now developing into something closer than just high school friends, college friends, casual friends. But clearly you're both Mormon at the same time too. How are you mitigating this space?
That was hard. And I had a video out, you know, so I was, that was a very dark time. I mean, that was very difficult because I had dated girls before, but very like lightly. Like I never had kissed a girl. I just would go on dates and like hold hands and just, you know, and then I would realize like, yeah, okay, I'm gay, you know? And so then I'd continue this, but I never wanted and felt like I could move to the next step with somebody. And then, yeah, with her, it just was so right. Like every second of it, I didn't question that we should be together. And, but you have this other side pulling you of like, I've got this video out. I'm telling everybody that I'm going to stay alone for the rest of my life. And I'm now falling in love with my best friend. And as we moved forward with that, it obviously was more difficult the first months when I didn't know if she felt the same way. But once we did come to that understanding of, yes, it's mutual, we took it extremely slow, very, very slow. I mean, we had so many different experiences during that time, but I think the most important part for us was taking it mindfully. Like we were very open communication through every section of it. Like after we told each other we liked each other, we still didn't kiss for 2 months after that. Like we were very slow in everything that we did, but the peace that we felt and that we communicated to each other, I think helped us move forward to the place that we are today.
Yeah. Just our connection never wavered.
Yeah.
But So when it became like inseparable and I was like doing anything to see you, like I would in my mind need to plan the next time that I was going to see her just to be like, okay, like I'll see her on Monday or I'll see her on Wednesday. Like, and it just was all like subconscious. Like none of this was like, I don't know. It just was so natural is the only word I can really describe it as, because I just wanted to see her again and again, which I'm like, that's so typical of any other couple. Like you just want to see him again. And so I was trying to come to terms with it because, you know, having these feelings for the first time for any girl, I was freaking out. It's like, this is, oh my gosh, I'm going to be in so much trouble. And I had only felt that I was maybe in love with this boy when I was like 17 or 18. That lasted a few years. And so that was the only guy that I could be like, okay, I think I was in love, but it was a super unhealthy relationship of just back and forth. Like it was an emotional roller coaster for me. And so I was like, well, I've only kind of felt, you know, that I was in love with this person, but now with these feelings for Jess, like this really is like the real deal. Like this is like everything. And so, you know, growing up really religious and spiritual, and I still claim that today because that's part of me. I'm not going to put something down just because others are uncomfortable by it. But though, you know, love and religion are really, really important aspects of who I was. So I couldn't just be like, okay, I'm just going to be with Jess and, you know, put my relationship with God and, you know, my testimony on the back burner. I needed to fit like all these pieces of me into one cohesive person. And that took so long to do. And it was very traumatic.
How much of that piecing together, how much of that glue was Mormonism and what other people told you this experience was like, as opposed to what you actually were experiencing and feeling and learning as you ventured down? So often in this space, the Latter-day Saint community is quick to say there's no happiness, there's no joy, this is a counterfeit relationship.
Right.
From what you've described, none of that seems prevalent. Mm-hmm. This would have felt natural and complete and good and whole, which are all adjectives that are counter to the message. How did you navigate that? And what did you do personally to overcome the religious dogma to get to the hardcore reality of your experience?
You put that really beautifully, because it was like this constant you know, internal battle of this is what I've been taught, this is what I've seen, you know, others say to people of the LGBTQ plus community. So I was like, all these things are going to be said to me. And I have pretty severe social anxiety. And so I'm not good at handling confrontation or people being angry at me. Like I couldn't put that in my head as like, okay, how am I going to move forward with Jess? But I know that there's going to be confrontation because of, you know, the things that you just said, like, well, this isn't true happiness. Like, this isn't going to last. You know, there's a guy out there. If you say you're bisexual, there's a guy out there for you. Like, you know, all these things that people would tell me, it wasn't ringing true. It wasn't bringing me peace. And I just had to, and I've never been one to be able to have the confidence to stand on my own two feet. Like, that would, I would just want to please people. Like, I want everyone to be okay. I don't want people mad at me. I can't handle really targeted questions. I just shut down. And so it was a year of being closeted, if you will, with Jess. And I just physically and mentally and emotionally couldn't bring myself to make it public because I knew what was going to happen from, you know, from the religious aspect, from people being like, this isn't you. I can't believe that this is you. I'm not going to accept that. Like, all those things I knew was going to be my reality.
And it did. It was the reality.
It was. Yeah. It turned out to be pretty traumatic. Yeah. And what I kept coming back to was every time there was something traumatic said to me or done to me or a friend I lost, there was a tender mercy right after that from God that I felt like was Him saying, I have you. I know you. Like, you're not making this up. You're not choosing this. This isn't what, you know, you didn't wake up one day and be like, I'm going to choose to fall in love with Jess so I get bullied. So
I'm going to choose the persecution. I'm going to choose the ridicule. I'm going to choose being on the opposite end of love and acceptance and kindness.
Yeah.
I can choose my religion. I didn't choose my sexuality.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that becomes the reality for so many of us.
Well, and some take it that way. A lot of, especially within our culture and within our religion, a lot will say, well, you know, you just got lazy. Like, you just didn't want to go and find someone. So you took the easy way out. Like, you just went with your friend or whatever. And
you're desperate.
And you're desperate. Yeah. We've been told that, you know, we were desperate or whatever. And nothing except for love and true attraction and connection could make somebody go through what we've gone through together. Like, exactly. Nothing. No amount of ease. Like, this was no part of it was easy at all. If anything, the love and connection is what caused us to stay together, because if we didn't have it, we wouldn't have. It would have just been too difficult.
If the experience wasn't easy, let's talk about the part where it made it worth it.
Yeah.
You're being focused on the hallmark site of the Mormon Church on their website, highlighting this topic. Savannah, you've got family and friend pressure and probably some self-identity battles going on back and forth. Both of you have the weight of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
On your shoulders. At what point in your relationship did it click? and you realized that all of that meant nothing compared to the relationship that you could build.
I think it was our house.
Yeah, so all those things that you said was what I was experiencing, like, to a T. And then, throwing social anxiety on top of that, I just was a mess. And it was Jess and our connection that got us through. But there were the times where it would just become, like, my head was under the water with people's comments, people's reactions,
persecutions,
like the religion I loved, you know, there's all these things coming at me. And I would just break down. Like, I had severe fetal position panic attacks, and
you lost a ton of weight.
Yeah. I didn't have an appetite. I just was so consumed with this stress of who am I? Who's going to accept me? How am I going to do this? Like, what does God think of me? All these, like, foundational questions that is crumbling under my feet. But what the point was, where it clicked of, okay, I'm going to choose to go, you know, I'm going to choose to handle all of this hard stuff because it's worth it. And it came when we were looking for a house together. And that's when we were pretty much going to choose this house, was when kind of my whole world came at a head. And
when it kind of went public, our relationship went public, because we were secret together for a year, besides some of my family members knowing, but everybody didn't know. And then it came out that we were together pretty much like the month before we were going to buy this house. And so that's when everything hit. And it was like this big question now, like, what do you choose? You know, you now got all this persecution, you have this pressure, you have all these people trying to pull you in this direction. And we had these plans of getting this house, and it just was eating her. I mean, just eating her alive. And I remember her sitting in my office, and she was just hysterical, just crying, and was just like, I can't do this. You know, or I can't figure this out. She was just like hysterical. And I had applied for the home by myself, and I didn't tell her that. And I got accepted to have the home by myself. So then I turned to her and I said, I don't want, like, I want you to make the choice and want you to want to be with me. Like, I don't want you to be pressured to be with me. And so I've decided, like, to buy the home on my own. I've gotten accepted. You know, you're welcome to come anytime, obviously, but like, we can't buy this home together because it's just not going to work. And she just like lost it. I mean, she was just hysterical. And I just was like so confused, because I was like, she's so upset that we're not getting this home together. Yeah. And so then finally I turned to her and I just said, would you be this upset if we were getting the home together? Like, you know, is this like, or is this, what's this a result of? And she just kind of stopped.
I just instantly stopped crying and just thought, and was like, no, like I wouldn't.
That's what I want. Like,
I wouldn't feel like this. I wouldn't be having a panic attack. I wouldn't be in this fetal position sobbing. Like, I wouldn't. I would be excited and I feel peaceful. And that literally was
the turning point.
The turning point where I was like, you know, people were telling me all these things, and I never felt any peace from those questions or those encounters or what they would say to me. But every time it was just about me and Jess, I felt peace. And I felt like God was like the glue holding us together, but it was our connection. And it was just like so natural that I was like, I would feel great buying the house with you. Like,
and that's kind of when it turned, I think.
I want to choose, you know, to go through the hard if I get to be with you. And I know that God's going to carry the load with me. And
you did.
Yeah, you totally did.
So you have Savannah finally working out her issues.
Jess was very patient. She had to be very patient.
But there's something bigger, and that's the church. And you are still all over the website.
On the website.
And I mean, there's still people out there who are looking up to your story. There are grandmothers and mothers out there saying, see,
yes,
she can do it. You can do it too.
Yes. And that's something I had to face after the fact. And I can get to that point. But I had called church headquarters. It was when we bought our home. I think it was that summer, because I was still in this, like, I don't know what's going to happen. And so I had called up to the highest I could. And I just said, hey, listen, like, I'm with a girl. I've moved in with a girl. It looks like we're moving forward. This is where I feel peace. Whatever you guys think, you know, needs to happen, like, I'm great with. And they were, I mean, honestly, amazing, like, just absolutely incredible. And they were just like, you know what, let's just see where it goes. It's going to be okay. Like, 'cause they knew the emotional impact of that thing going out that it had on me. And so they're like, we don't just want to like pull it off, and then you have this other big, like, you know, waves of problems and struggles. And so they said, you know, let's just keep moving forward. It's okay. Thanks for telling us, type thing. And then
we can have some real talk here too. you're not the first story they had to pull.
No.
There were 16 yes. stories that originally came onto the website, and one by one by one, so and two and three kept
falling
off.
Five people were featured on the website, and each of us had multiple videos, but as far as like people featured, there were five, and one of them was pulled previously. And I was actually in contact with him over the time of all of this as well. And he knew where I was at and just a great support as well. But yeah, then mine was the next one to be pulled. But that wasn't until like a year and a half after we had moved in together, when I finally got to the point where I was like, I need to move on in the next chapter of my life. Like I can't hold on to this anymore, as much as the backlash is going to come and things like that. So I called up to church headquarters again, and I know that the people that were working there were inspired and were supposed to be there at that time. Because without them, I can't imagine working with somebody that wouldn't have been supportive and loving towards me. But specific individuals up there were just all about me and just said, like, you did what you're supposed to do. You've softened hearts. It's time for you to move on. Like, they just were the most loving, supportive people I've ever met. And so we orchestrated the movie or the videos to be taken down at the same time that I uploaded a video explaining what was going on. And I had a lot of emotions going on during that time because I had felt bad for multiple things. The first thing I felt bad for was those that did look up to me at that time, because I know what it's like to be in the Mormon faith, realizing your sexuality and needing somebody to look up to and say, like, how can I make this work? And so I knew that I was letting down a lot of people that way. And that was really hard for me to swallow. However, I also knew that my video had hurt people too. I know now what it's like to be on the other side, to see people say, hey, I'm going to go live celibate. I'm going to live in the Mormon church, and have them be held up as these poster people and then be compared to them. And then be the one that's like, well, why can't you be like them? So there's so many aspects of this that were painful, because I felt that I was hurting people no matter what I was doing. It didn't matter what avenue I went. And so that was something that I just, after I had the video taken down, I just said, I just want to love and support no matter where people are at, because those that are releasing these videos and these podcasts and things like that, that are staying in the Mormon faith and having these covenant lives, they're not trying to hurt anybody, right? They're trying their best as well. And I know what it's like to get the fire on that side as well. However, I also know what it feels like to be compared to them. And so there's just so many avenues. And so I think finally, after all of this went down, I just said, I just want to be a source of love. Like, I just want to be a source of, the journey's never over. Like, no matter where we're at, our journey's not over. Nobody's journey is over. It's going to keep changing. It's going to keep moving forward. And love during every single minute of that process is the most important thing.
And I think that was probably the downfall of that platform, was the restrictive nature of the message.
Yeah.
The message was very boxy. It said, here's how I will be. I will be celibate and single for life.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's a really tough guarantee to sign up for.
As a 20-year-old. Yeah.
For life.
Yeah.
Yeah, without having those experiences. And I'm super heartened to know of the reception the church gave you and the concessions they made in order to understand how this is a line upon line, precept upon precept experience.
Yeah.
That they were favorable and accommodating and helped your experience to become more comfortable.
Absolutely.
That's something that we can absolutely look at the church for and thank them for that.
And I thank them for that platform, as hard as it was. And like I said, I know it hurt people when I took it down. I know that it hurt people when I put it up. You know, like I said, I was in that hard spot, but I'm grateful that it happened, because I do feel that you have to have voices in every single corner in order to touch people. Like, there's going to be some that won't listen to those that are in same-sex relationships, but they'll listen to somebody that's in the church that is a, you know, covenant. So I'm grateful for that platform that I had at that time, because I do feel and know, as people in church headquarters said, they watched it soften the hearts of so many people, because I was trying my best at that time. And so I'm grateful for it. And I'm also very grateful to where it led me.
Savannah, was there ever a part of your experience where you said, you know, I'm kind of the catalyst of this? Like, there are a lot of fiery darts heading in Jessica's direction. Maybe if I were not part of this, or if I wasn't the one who's forcing myself to California and causing some of this, that it would be a little easier for her. Did you ever experience any of those feelings or thoughts?
Yeah, definitely, just because that's what, you know, you set out, or Jess set out to do. And so I felt like, shoot, I'm in the, like, it's because of me that, you know, you're having to have these hard conversations and talking with her church headquarters. And I saw the struggle that you went through. And yeah, I definitely felt like, shoot, I'm sorry. But I know, like, I couldn't deny how I felt. And I felt like it would have been such a dishonest thing to say, okay, well, I need to leave, then I can't stay here, because this was the truest thing I've ever felt. So,
and she was saving me. I mean, I think, and hopefully she saw that too. I was, anybody who knows where I was at after that video went out knew that I was going down a very, very dark road. Because in addition to that pressure and to all the attention that was given to it, I also have legit OCD. Like, I had to go into intensive outpatient treatment for it. And I went into a relapse during that time. And I was pretty much done with everything. I was doing very unhealthy things. I didn't want to live anymore. I was pretty close to quitting.
And in previous discussions regarding this video and your experience leading up to it, you even used the word suicide.
Yeah.
Like, there, explain that. Where were, like, how did this video help you? How might it have contributed to furthering that pain?
Yeah. So I think leading up to it, I've had suicidal struggles throughout my life. I mean, more at some specific times than others, mostly through my OCD relapses is when I will get suicidal, just from the pain and the struggle of trying to get out of those episodes. But the website and my video helped initially, because I thought, here's a purpose for me. Here's something that I can look forward to and help people with. And then after it came out, the pressure and the stress of something like that going viral set me back into another relapse. And so dealing with that pressure as well as my own mental health was devastating. And I would have to say I was, through my suicidal episodes, which I think I've had maybe like four throughout my life, that was the heaviest one, was after the website went out, for that year after I didn't know if I'd make it. And, you know, I did things, and I'm fairly open with my experiences, 'cause I feel like it helps people to connect, to other stories. But at the time when I was so suicidal, the only thing that really kept me alive was knowing the pain that it would cause my family and my friends. I knew if I had killed myself that it would devastate them and they would never be the same. And so I thought if I died naturally, then I, at least, like, that would be easier for them. So I started trying to find ways to speed up the process of dying. And I got a tanning pass, and skin cancer runs in my family, and I tanned every single day for months. I mean, I just wanted a way out. I didn't know how to without hurting my family. I knew that they would hurt a little bit, but I knew that if it was flat out suicide, it would hurt worse. And so I knew that they wouldn't let you tan within 24 hours. So I'd tan at 11 o'clock Monday, 12 o'clock Tuesday, 1 o'clock Wednesday. And I just was doing the most, like, wasn't wearing seatbelt, was doing anything I could because I did not want to live anymore. And that was one of the moments when one of my family members said to me, they said, "Do you think that you're living the way that God wants you to live?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm not having sex with women. I'm not kissing women. I'm reading my scriptures. I'm whatever." And they're like, "Yeah, but you won't get out of your bed. You're trying to die. Like, you can't help anybody. You can't do anything. Like, you really think that this is how God wants you to live versus living with a woman, loving, helping others, things like that." And I was like, that kind of hit me hard. And it was just like, yeah, how am I any better right now? You know, just because I'm not, you know, being sexual or whatever, like kissing a girl, like, am I any better now you know, than if I was doing that. And it turns out that I am a way better person having a purpose and a companion and love in my life and wanting to help. I mean, we've been to Africa multiple times together. We're constantly thinking of ideas of how to do charity work. We want to help. And my life's just flipped. So, I mean, I hope that you know, Savannah, what you've done for me. And I know that those thoughts naturally will come in that, like, well, maybe I was the temptation to bring you down, but you were the light that brought me life.
Well, I think we were kind of both put in that position. Like, you know, up until you, I hadn't had these feelings so purely and naturally. And so it's like you felt that same thing of, well, if I wasn't here, you would, you know, be going to the temple, or you would be still doing the same stuff. Like, I was at the point where I was like, I don't even need to be in a relationship. Like, up until we were hanging out, or before we were hanging out, I was like, I'm just not feeling it for anybody. I'm great with just being single. Like, I'm good with my independence. I don't really need anybody. It'd be great, you know, like, sure. But I was totally fine being just on my own. And then obviously our story happened, but it was never like, oh, I'm going to come and be, you know, your savior of your story. It honestly just was from the most, half time I didn't even say anything because I just wanted to be with her. Like, I feel sad that I, at the time, didn't know everything you were going through, but it kind of helped the fact of, for in the most, like, pure and godlike way, I just loved you. And, like, it wasn't like who I could help. You know, there's some people that kind of go into relationships because they want to fix or help, or, you know, I don't know. It was nothing like that. It was just this pure attraction and just pure connection. And I was like, I can carry what you're carrying. And it didn't feel heavy to me. I feel like, in a way, that's, if I could parallel that to what God feels like sometimes, like, he's willing to carry our burdens and our weaknesses and trials, and I'm sure it doesn't feel heavy to him. He's happy to do it. And so that's how I felt with you. And I was like, I got this. Like,
you did.
I just want you to be happy. So
I love that you've both been able to share real experiences of happiness and spirituality and progress that continue to drive home the message that this isn't as archaic, clandestine, disgusting,
sexualized,
contagion. I mean, all the words that have been used to describe this topic.
Yeah. Right.
That this is a very real experience that, I mean, a heterosexual couple can look at your relationship and say, we felt the same thing. Like, we can identify with that.
Yeah, right.
And the beauty of that is that is the important part of sharing these stories and giving those examples.
Yeah.
Is that we can draw parallels and that this isn't as off the beaten path as some would have you believe.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. We talk about it all the time. We're like, this literally is a fairy tale to us. And I think if everybody, like you said, looked at the parts that they can, that resonate with them, and that they can feel like, oh yeah, that was part of my story too. Like, it really is just a fairy tale, like, love story.
To round, like, I think, like, the full circle moment for me, and I've shared this one or two other times, but the full circle moment for me was our wedding and our reception. I don't know if you know that story, but it's our favorite part. So we were searching for reception venues, and we were talking to my grandma, and she was like, you know, go to this place, this place, this place. And Savannah looked one up, and she's like, oh, it's called the Monarch. Like, we should go and check this one out. My grandma's like, oh, you can check that one out, but do these ones first. And Savannah just felt pulled to this Monarch place. And I'm like, okay, whatever, let's go. You know,
saw pictures, was black and white.
Yeah, black. She loved it.
I was like, give me all the black and white.
No color.
Yeah, no color whatsoever.
So, so she set up an appointment. She's like, hey, I'll meet you there. And, after work. And so I went there after work, and my heart just dropped when I got there. I was like, oh my gosh. And so I sat there for a moment, and I remember having this really cool experience, and then thinking, I'm going to wait till after to tell Savannah, like, this experience that I'm having. So we went in, we did this whole tour of the Monarch, and she was like, this is it. This is the place. And I was like, you're positive. Like, this is our venue.
And she said, there's exposed bricks.
I know. She's like, yeah, there's beams. There's exposed bricks. Yes. This is the place. And I said, okay, I have something to tell you. And she was like, okay. And I was like, this is where we filmed my Mormon message. And she was like, oh
my gosh.
She's like, you've got to be kidding me. And it had been redone. So when I was there, it was this broken down warehouse. Like, it was just like abandoned. There were like dead birds everywhere. I mean, it was just a gross, gross place. It was really, really was gross. And we had to like sweep it out when we were doing the video stuff. But somebody had come in and redone it. They had painted the brick white. They had done these beautiful black beams. They had turned it into this reception center. And when I was in my truck, like when I first got there, I first had this anxiety of like, oh my gosh, like this is where I did my video. But then I had this cool moment of like, this is a full circle moment. Like, I am now rebuilding my story. Like, I first was broken down when I was here. I was devastated, but I was trying my best at that time. I went through this rebuilding process, and now I get to start my story in this beautiful place with the perfect person. And it just was the best full circle moment I could ever ask for.
I love it.
It's called the monarch.
It's called the monarch. I mean, like, what else?
Yeah. Transformation. Come on. Butterflies.
Yeah.
I think that's so beautiful. And like the symbolism and the imagery, just thinking of that, I think so many people can relate to that experience. I think so many who are listening to this podcast episode who are closeted want the monarch. Mm-hmm. They want that experience. They want to be able to openly and without prejudice, without commentary or the opinion of other people, just live their experience.
Yeah,
exactly.
And to be able to live complete to their measure of creation.
Yes.
That they aren't an anomaly. They aren't broken. They aren't alone. And really that they need to know that their best days are ahead.
Yeah.
What is your advice to that closeted person who listens to this podcast episode and says, but I can't have that. That's not available to me.
Yeah. I would say the journey's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. That's the first thing that I would say, is that it gets better. And if my story doesn't show that for anybody, I mean, I was on a Mormon website, like of all people, you know, to find love and to get married, you would think that I would be one of the last, you know, and that's how worth it for me, was to let all of that go and trust in the path that I felt God was leading me to. And, the heartache and the pain will happen. Like, that's inevitable. But there's so many people here to support and to love, and they've had the same story and can help give advice. And in the end, it's worth it. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Trying to put my thoughts together, because it's kind of a heavy question. I felt like a lot of responsibility to that question, because I came out when I was 25 after a whole life of thinking I was straight, but just didn't have maybe as many hormones as other people. And maybe I just was different. But I think I would say your feelings and situation is valid, and other people are going to tell you all sorts of things. And I pray they don't, but if they do, that you can get through it. If I could get through it, and I know, I mean, it's kind of like take my word for it, but it was the most traumatic thing I've ever been through or thought I could endure. But even if you're on your own, like, you will be supported either through this community, or there will be ways that God or a supreme being or the universe is going to help you through it. And I've always said, now that, you know, I think everybody should be with someone that they feel strong enough about that they would take on the world for that person. And we're just lucky enough that we get to prove it. And I just come out when, you know, you're ready and it's your timetable, and however you come out or it comes out is going to be okay and perfect in the end. And I don't know, I'm just sending all my love.
Yeah. It's a process, and everybody's process is different.
I'm not saying vain. There are church leaders who are listening to this podcast as well, and parents of children who identify as LGBTQ, and maybe even some who yet to meet a child or a relative or a friend who identifies but are trying to better understand this space as an ally. What is your advice to them?
I think to them, I would just say, first, let your, you know, if it's, this is someone that you know, let them come out on their time. But when they do come out, just match their emotion. If they're in a place where they're excited and they're confident in coming out to you, then match that. And if they're in a place where, like me, it's in the fetal position, then just be there in that fetal position with them. And, you know, I think it's good to tell them you love them, but be specific when you say you love them. Say, you know, it's not just, you know, I got a ton of I love yous, which was awesome, and I really, really appreciate that. And I know they're coming from a good place, but I kind of wanted a more specific, like, hey, whatever you choose, like, I love you. I believe in your story. I believe in what you're telling me. Don't invalidate someone's experience just because you didn't see it or because you can't wrap your mind around it. It's not really about understanding just because we're all going to be different, but I think it's just about being there and letting them know that whatever happens, that you're a safe place, because feeling safe is like the greatest feeling in the world. And we can have different opinions and beliefs, and that's totally fine. But I think creating the safe place for your loved ones is going to be where you will become a Christ-like figure in their lives.
Yeah, I would say if you have questions, make sure to ask questions from a place of trying to understand instead of a place with motives. I think that's one of the biggest challenges we've had, is when people ask questions, they have ulterior motives behind those questions. They're,
feels, you know, targeted.
It feels targeted. Yeah, and it feels like, well, you know, don't you know that the Book of Mormon's true? And it's like, what are you asking, you know, like, what are you asking with that? Or don't you know, like, your church membership is going to be in trouble? Like, these are all questions that aren't trying to understand our experience. And so if you truly just want to listen and understand, that's where the greatest unity and love and safe place will come, is essentially through those safe questions.
I think your story is beautiful. I think it's inspiring. I'm happy that you experienced it.
Yeah.
Just listening to your story, and I think those who have an opportunity to understand your story a little bit better, I think can develop levels of compassion and empathy and understanding that they didn't prior understand. And I thank you for that. I think it's really a great story.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for puking in the car.
You're so welcome.
Yes, thank you for puking in the car.
And lastly, if I could just put this in, I was reading just 1 Nephi 1. And I just was kind of thinking about, like, God and, like, the contradictions that he really has put out there. I mean, coming all the way from Adam and Eve in the garden, and giving two, you know, contradictory, you know, commandments. And so I just was starting to read the Book of Mormon with that mindset, because I haven't been reading the Book of Mormon. Honestly, I've been a little fearful, just because I don't want these targeted feelings of, you know, that contradict what I know we have and God has led us to. But I was reading, and literally, and I had that prayer in my heart of, like, God, just let me look at this through a different way. You know, I've always wanted those stories of, oh yeah, I read it, you know, 100 times, but this 101 time was so different. And honestly, I had that this time, and looking through just that first chapter, I think it was in the first or second verse, but Nephi says that he's had a lot of tribulations, but those are blessings. And I would have skimmed over that. I would have been like, great, he has a positive outlook. But this time I looked at it, and going through it, you know, coming out and standing on my own two feet and kind of being the only one in my circle that feels this way, and kind of being on my own with it. But that tribulation has now turned into, like, the biggest blessing of my life. And tribulations really can turn into blessings, and contradictions can be beautiful and valid and real. And
Yeah. We're just grateful. We're grateful for this opportunity to share our story. So thank you so much. We really, really, really are grateful for this chance.
For those who are listening on the audio version of this podcast, I think they can feel that in your voice. They can hear that in your voice. For those who are watching on our video version, they can see it.
Thank you. That means a lot.
It does. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you for giving us an hour of your time and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Savannah, Jessica, life. You've got the whole world open now.
You're exciting. Stuck.
Let's go. Let's do it.
So I'm stuck with you. That's all.
Yeah, stuck with each other.
Well, I'm happy that you you gave us an opportunity to see your great gay agenda unfold.
Yes. Such
it's
an agenda.
An agenda. Just
lifestyle.
Lifestyle. Yeah.
Nope. Just a love story. Yeah. Run-of-the-mill love stories.
Yep. Savannah and Jessica, thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And that's another episode on Latter Gay Stories podcast. We are really grateful that you gave us an hour of your time to better understand Jessica and Savannah's story. If you are following along on the audio version of this podcast, we invite you to subscribe to this channel. If you're following along on a video version on YouTube or our Facebook channel, we invite you to share this episode. If there's someone that you think can benefit from an episode just like this, we invite you to hit that share button. Also, if you have a message for Savannah or Jessica, we invite you to share it below on our Facebook or YouTube version, and we'll have them chime in and maybe answer some of your questions that you might have. The Latter Gay Stories podcast is your opportunity to better understand the intersection of sexuality and reality, where it meets at the intersection of LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. But most importantly, it's podcast episodes just like this that help you to continue writing your Latter Gay story.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at LatterGayStories.org.